mean after all Roku and Sozin went through together, even after Roku showed him mercy, Sozin betrayed him like that?
It's like these people are born bad.
No, that's wrong. I don't think that was the point of what Roku showed me at all.
Then what was the point?
Roku was just as much Fire Nation as Sozin was, right? If anything, their story proves anyone's capable of great good and great evil. Everyone, even the Fire Lord and the Fire Nation, have to be treated like they're worth giving a chance. And I also think it was about friendships.
Do you really think friendships can last more than one lifetime?
I don't see why not.
Well, scientifically speaking, there's no way to prove that...
Oh, Sokka, just hold hands.
Welcome back to the Bitter Jurors podcast. I'm Sam Stanish. We are a queer Avatar The Last Airbender superfan podcast. With me, as always, is the man who, once gone, all of my plans can come to fruition, Derek Reining.
Oh my god. Oh shit. Okay. I look forward to that day, I guess. I look forward to confronting you and then not doing anything about it.
Yeah, I think I'm the Sozin in this relationship. with us this week is a wonderful guest, one of the sweetest, most beautiful, kind, wonderful boys I've met doing comedy, Brandon Zirko.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for those wonderful words.
How are you this week, Brandon?
I am doing great. I've been looking forward to this. I've watched the episode, took some notes.
Amazing.
I'm ready.
Well, can you, to start off, give us some background on your history as an Avatar fan?
Sure. I watched it on TV, watched Avatar The Last Airbender, watched Legend of Korra. When I got older, I used my younger siblings as an excuse to watch it. Just like, you know, I'm bonding with them, watching cartoons with them. But reality, I just love some bending, you know? I'm a sucker for bending. And then when it got on Netflix, you know I was watching that too.
Yeah. Watching cartoons or watching specific cartoon. Singular.
Specifically Avatar.
Yeah.
Yes. Bonding over the cartoon, the only cartoon. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are here to talk about the Avatar and the Fire Lord, which we can get to, but breaking news at the top of the hour, it just came out that in the lot, well, I don't know if this is a rumor or not, but at the top of the hour, they just announced or spoiled that in the live action show, Katara is going to be the older sibling, 16, to Sokka's 14, which I'm shocked about.
Yeah, it's a confusing decision. I mean, it almost feels like maybe they just casted people and were like, guess she's older.
That feels like a wild, unnecessary element.
Oh.
Time.
No. Yeah, element.
The fifth element. I just feel like it, because I just feel like the part of the tragedy of Katara's character is that she was forced to become this older, more mature mother type figure, and that unfortunately just makes sense if she is the older sibling.
Right, there's not that tension to it. It's just like she's expected to do what all older sisters do, which is be the pillar of their family.
I hope that Sokka still tries to be... I hope the actor who plays Sokka is actually older than her. The actress that's playing...
They just made the choice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I want this to be the director's choice. He wanted to make it their own.
Mm-hmm. As soon as the original creators were gone, they're like, guys, we're flipping the ages.
Mm-hmm.
What we've all wanted all along. Yeah.
Oh my god, breaking news. Aang is 73 in this.
Whoa.
He wasn't ever in the iceberg. He was no. Just was gone for 100 years.
He was just hiding behind a rock.
Yeah, he's off screen for those 100 years, and then he popped back in.
Yeah. But we're talking the Avatar and the Fire Lord. I've noticed this all throughout the show, watching it this time. Whoever titles these episodes loves to put a V at the front of it. Whoever that is, they cannot get enough of the article, the. And so they finally found the opportunity to put two of them in a single title. So I just felt like that person must have been excited on that day.
I Absolutely. My issue, though, is apparently according to the title, Fire Lord is one word, and everywhere else it's two words. I don't understand what's going on. It's upsetting. Doesn't make sense. Like, I don't understand the.
I can only assume that the title person who loved the word "the" so much was so excited that they got two, they completely missed put the space between the words.
We've all been there.
Yeah, I don't know about the. I guess I wasn't. I didn't notice. I was so preoccupied with the double "the" that I didn't see the Fire Lord single word, mononymous Fire Lord. I guess since Avatar is one word, they wanted to make it, you know, the symbolism.
Yeah, that's. it just upsets me. It's just a really core level. It's two words. Like, come on, I hate it.
I noticed that you in the podcast named it Fire Lord. You put a space in the podcast title.
Yeah, I mean that was just. I didn't look it up when I was doing it, wow. I went with what I know to be the canonical spelling of Fire Lord.
Feels like an act of defiance.
That'll show him. I mean, that's more defiance than Roku puts up in this episode, honestly. Even against two active volcanoes. Like, don't
okay.
put the decision there.
He used far too much force in the waterbending duel, I felt. I was worried for the Northern Water Tribe citizens who, like, must have died during his, like, mastery exam or whatever that was. Like, he just, like, he sent a gigantic tidal wave through the town.
I really thought, like, that guy, I thought he was going to destroy that palace or the temple or whatever and just rip it in half.
He already destroys one palace in this episode. Which I do enjoy as, like, an explanation for why apparently, like, the interior designers, after making this like, gorgeous dragon golden, like, sculptural element, once that got blown up, they're like, we can just have some, like, dark curtains and some fire. That works. I don't blame
Which part are you referring to here? I don't know this off the top of my head.
When we see in the flashbacks the throne room that Sozin occupies, there's like this gigantic sort of mural of like a golden dragon. It's like very ornate everywhere. And then it gets exploded by Roku and their little like lover's quarrel. And then in our current times, we see that they have opted to, in lieu of like recreating this huge masterpiece, they're like fireworks, right? Just make some flames pop up like a hibachi grill and it's fine.
Yeah. I guess I thought that was in a, like, on the front line of, like, him striking out against the Earth Nation, but I must be mistaken.
I thought it was the Fire Nation Palace, but I could be wrong, but I rarely am, so I'm gonna take my word for it.
I trust you implicitly. This episode I've always really liked and enjoyed, and I feel like it gives us a lot of backstory that we've sort of been wanting throughout the whole show, like, who is Avatar Roku? What's his whole deal? And, like, why is the world the way that it is? And this episode just gives us a bunch of answers, like, back to back to back to back to back in believable ways. Like, I did think, we get Zuko with the scrolls and then Aang just has Roku telling him the story. And I do feel like it's very applicable to, like, Zuko's story where Zuko has to do so much work to get these answers, whereas Aang just, like, gets handed a spirit guardian.
He just closes his eyes and it's like, yeah. Oh, there's the whole story.
And that's Zuko's struggle.
Yeah.
Aang even in finding out about his lineage, which I just feel like he would know. How would he not know? But it's fine.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. What are you going to say?
No, I just love an episode. I love any episode where Zuko's like, maybe what I'm doing is wrong.
Maybe. And he's not happy about that revelation ever either. It's always like a glowering face. Like, he's pissed that he is stupid and that we love him for it.
Yeah. Plus, they can't help themselves with these Star Wars parallels. Like, the very Anakin Skywalker, they were like, Zuko, you can balance the force, the elements, and, you know, bring us all to salvation.
Yeah, exactly. Azula is on the same page as you, I think, because she, like, instantly is like, what is wrong with you? Like, you don't know about, like, the guy who started all this? Like, I like that Azula's judgmental of Zuko for asking about their great-grandfather.
I think she could be judgmental of him asking truly anything at all.
I mean, yeah. To be fair, he did ask a stupid question, so I don't blame her.
Yeah, I mean, he, like, I feel like it, based on the question, I feel like Azula and everyone around, it must be common knowledge that Avatar Roku is their great-grandfather, right? Like he just must not know anything about his history at all.
I imagine that they don't talk about it because the mother was, like, excommunicated, essentially. So I imagine that they don't like to talk about any connection to the Avatar and anything related to that mother's, like, side of things.
Totally. It makes sense, but I also am just like, nobody knew. Like, even in the 12 years where, like, his mother wasn't excommunicated, it never came up that she was the granddaughter of an Avatar. And that, like, their lineage is, like,
dangerous talk, maybe.
Yeah. It's fine. It does, like, play into this idea of, like, this fascist sort of place where, like, the Avatar is evil. I do like that they, like, hint at this, like, these before times. I like seeing, like, what the Fire Nation was before they became all imperialist. And, like, one little thing that happens is Sozin, like, makes a joke to Roku about, like, bending all four elements at once, and he, like, does movements that are clearly, like, supposed to mimic the other bending styles. And it's like, oh, so there was a time when the Fire Nation knew about other bending styles and, like, clearly had some sort of respect for them. Which is, like, a huge contrast to something we know, like, probably, I think, in, like, book one or whatever, like, Zhao is talking about, like, fire being the superior element. They call earthbending savagery at one point, so it's, like, an interesting sort of peek into culture before they became evil.
Yeah, and I think we also see that when Iroh's talking about his redirecting technique, he said he learned that from waterbenders.
Right, so yeah. It's a good way to, like, draw that connection to, like, Iroh's, like, trying to bring the Fire Nation back to this mm-hmm. place, whereas for, like, this generation that we've seen, and for the viewer, it's like the Fire Nation has always been these assholes who, like, hate everyone else and refuse to, like, learn any other culture, and in fact try to encroach their culture on other ones. So it's nice to see that little hint there that that was what it was like before.
Mm-hmm. I think it probably has something to do with, like, them being the nation that has the Avatar at that point. Like, even if they don't know who, they didn't know Roku was the Avatar right then, they knew that somebody in the Fire Nation was the Avatar. And so, like, probably there's just a better understanding of, like, the global cultures because someone is going to have to know all about it. Might as well be me. Might try to make a buck off of my knowledge of the Water Nation.
I do also appreciate that they made Sozin ridiculously attractive.
Literally, my immediate first thought, could not believe what I was seeing.
Right? Just a hot, short king. Well, I mean, he's also evil, but just, like, beefy beefcake. Love it. Good for the Fire Nation.
Also, yeah. I feel like when Roku, like, gets that beard, he's cleaned up, he's filled out.
No, beanpole no longer.
Right. Yeah, that's what, when you said you're the Sozin, I was like, but Roku is also 7 feet or however tall you are, and I.
And you're a stout legend. I forgot. You're right.
It was just like a really long con to get me to mention that you are tall, which is the goal of every tall person, is for someone else to say that yep, you're tall.
I've actually always felt like I would enjoy life more if I wasn't super tall.
What do you think you're missing out on?
I don't know. I just feel like I would be happier if I knocked off, like, a full foot.
Oh my god.
That is a drastic change.
Wouldn't my energy be entirely different?
It would. But we'll never know because you're so damn tall.
And as always, this was my intention. I do hope it gets brought up all the time.
How's the weather
up here? Just fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously we're not the only ones who think Sozin is hot because come on. The sexual tension between these boys is just unbelievable. Sparks are flying.
Yeah, he was like, I didn't see him for 12 years, and he was still my best friend. And it's like, okay, you're in love with him.
Yeah, the sparring match, the hair clip. That is like one of the most romantic scenes of the entire show. Is him. This is meant for a crown prince, aka if I were to hypothetically marry a man who would also become a prince, I would give him this. It's very, very evident what's going on.
A very tender exchange.
It was.
Plus, you know, not taking him out when he started to talk about being an evil fascist person. I had never really thought about it in this light before, but I feel like his infatuation with Roku, like, prevented him from being able to like have a team avatar of his own, because he loved Roku so much and like was his best friend, or like he was in love with him, whatever you want to say. But I feel like that prevented him from creating a team around him, because Sozin obviously had to stay and like be the Fire Lord, so he like couldn't go on these adventures with him around the world. And so in all these other scenes, we never see him with like a crew, and we don't see him with like a group of people going places. And honestly, I did not get the sense that he was really going on many adventures in the first place. It kind of seemed like he was going from place to place, mastering the elements, and never really like doing anything avatar-y outside of the elemental part of it. Like, I didn't get a sense that he was like saving the world or like being a diplomat or anything, any of those things. So I feel like there was no room for him to grow as a person and just sort of became the avatar throughout his adulthood, as like obviously he was always the avatar, but I just felt like he never got past that and wasn't able to experience what an avatar is supposed to experience. And I feel like maybe that's why he is such a failure.
Okay. I think it's more on the Fire Elders or whatever they're called, because like it seemed like they were very much in control of his life. Like, he's like, oh, looks like I don't need to bring anything at all because they told me I can't own anything. And I got to imagine they were like Fire Nation above all else. And they were like, you can have friends, but you cannot take them with you. Like, he's like, my best friend was that earthbender. And then he's just like, we never see him again.
Poor Sud.
Yeah, poor Sud.
Yeah, which I believe is like, obviously in the opening credits, like, the earthbending guy is what originally Toph was supposed to look like. And I believe Sud is supposed to be like them using that character design again. Like, here's the big buff dude who Toph was supposed to be.
Yeah, the opening benders has always confused me. Like, the choices of who they are, and obviously they didn't know who they were at the very beginning of the show when they were like doing this, but it does not, the choices of them being like, it's like that guy and Aang and Azula and like Master Paku or something, and it's like, what do these four have in common?
Yeah, I believe it's Paku and Hyatso, I believe, is the airbender. I think you can see a mustache.
Yeah. So it's even less connected. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, which I do love that we got to see Monk Hyatso in this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe Roku trying to develop something else to like get his mind off of Sozin, but it clearly doesn't work.
Some friendships can, what does he say, ascend even lifetime, transcend even lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's like thousands of fan edits were born from that moment alone. The quote overlaid or on the bottom in italics. It's like, it's so clear to me.
Just lit up Tumblr that day.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Although that, like, that genuinely gets me, though. So, especially when Toph says it, like, that's so cute. Like,
mm-hmm.
I love it. And the hand holding, I love it. Yeah.
Of course, Sokka against it for no reason at all.
A classic older, classic older sibling thing. That's probably going to be gone in the live action version.
Yeah, like so much has happened. They've been through so much, and Sokka still is just like, I don't believe this. I will not hold hands.
Yeah. Ever
it
the
was
skeptic.
Very book one, episode chapter one, Sokka. Yeah. Just like calling bending magic and just like not yeah. believing in it.
It's like you've seen everything. You've seen so much, Sokka.
Your girlfriend turned into the moon and you're still calling shit magic. Like, yeah. I'm just he oh but just barely held back on saying something misogynistic like he did in the pilot.
He says we have no proof, and it's like you're friends with the guy who is the proof. He's one of the people you're holding hands with.
Oh my god. How much more proof do you need?
He can't help it. He's just a classic R atheism dude bro, and we love him for it.
You know, or yeah. you know, a kinder Dana Scully. Dana Scully saw so much and never believed. So, you know, there are better I don't like Sokka being thought of as bad.
No, it's
No. He's the comic relief.
Yes. We love Sokka here always. Well, speaking of hands though, I did love like there's a lot of really good like match cuts in this episode, or like they do a good job of like paralleling Aang and Zuko in this episode. There's a really good one where it's like Aang, or it's Zuko's reaching out to the scrolls, and then we cut to Aang like reaching out to Roku's hand. And then later on, like at the end when Roku is dying, he puts his hand out to Sozin, and obviously Sozin does not take his hand. So I like that sort of theme throughout this episode, the idea of hands reaching out and people either rejecting them or holding them or whatever. So it's cute. I like a theme.
Plus it makes me think of the Kingdom Hearts intros where Riku is always holding his hand out to Sora. Very similar energy to Roku and Sozin, I think.
Wow.
Talk about lighting Tumblr up.
The first fan fiction I ever read was Riku x Sora. Probably around the same time of this episode's release. So it's all coming around.
Probably. I also did note that they did do a name drop of a past episode. Roku says the words bitter work in reference to learning the other elements, which is a cute nod to that episode where Aang was learning earthbending. Like you said, though, Roku's talking about struggling with waterbending, and then he proceeds to at least maim some people in the process.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that like Roku did this over a period of 12 years and Aang is doing it over a period of one, but it's like you do clearly see like how strong of a bender is. It's like we've never seen, even though he's struggled with waterbending, we never see Aang do anything of that magnitude with Earth, or we haven't yet anyway.
Yeah. It's always just like he has to be in the Avatar state in order for him to be that good, whereas Roku is just like, let me just shoot all four elements and just lights up the beach.
On a beach, I'm just going to stand here and do all that.
Just because.
Why the hell not? Honestly, that felt like the most realistic Avatar moment, is just like, why wouldn't you do that? Just probably caused horrible damage to something a mile away.
Yeah, butterfly effect.
I mean, literal butterflies probably were burnt up in that massive flame tsunami he created, but I'm sure it looked cool as hell, and it did, honestly.
Yeah, I'm reading a Star Wars book right now, and like many of the Jedi characters are under they're just like, we shouldn't use the Force unless we absolutely have to, like, and we just need to keep people safe, and that's the only reason we should ever use the Force. And I'm just glad that the Avatar world never does anything like that, and they're just like, look, if these people have magical superpowers, we're gonna have them use their magical superpowers.
Mm-hmm. It's what exactly. You want,
right? Because then it's like, what's the point of introducing the ability to shoot fire out of your hands if everyone's so upset about the idea of even doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Jong, don't interact.
Exactly. Sorry, we have a new silver daddy to thirst over who shoots fire out of his hands. Jong Jong is irrelevant now. Oh man. I also do love though, speaking of the tension between Sozin and Roku, I like when Roku shows up and says like it's over, like he's clearly alluding to whatever like sexual relationship they've got going on. Because like he doesn't say what is over, but he's like, it's over. Before they had their little tussle. So I could only assume that's what he's referring to there.
I don't think there are any other options for what he could be referring to.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
It couldn't be anything else.
I did like in that tussle, as you call it, like when Sozin fires that that final, like after obviously Roku's like, he's like, okay, bye, I'm leaving. Like I'm leaving you be, like, make the right choice. And then he like still does the firebolt at him. I like that Sozin disappears like in the intro.
He also disappeared when the world needed him most there.
Yeah, he sort of like ghosted his ex.
I just love the idea of like the people who had to get Sozin down from that giant earth pillar. Where like they had to like be cool about it. Like they cannot laugh. Like he's just hanging there by his robe and you have to be super cool. Otherwise you're totally getting fired.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, that and in it's the like, most literal sense.
Yep. How do they even get? They had to probably get some ladders out. Oh,
for sure.
So embarrassing.
Poor so himself. Embarrassing. And you have to be so cool about it.
Right. There's no earthbender nearby.
Mm-mm. You know who did that.
The only one in the area is the one who did it. And he's not getting you down.
Yeah.
Man. I do also would like to note that. Sozin like uses these words that we hear a lot from like Iroh and stuff, like this idea of destiny and fate, and he tries to use it to convince Roku to be evil. So I like that. That's kind of your hint that like, even though we really don't get like a good peek into like Sozin's like motivations beyond just he wants to rule the world. I do like that he seems to like be convinced of this grand fate for himself here in the same way that a lot of our characters are. And it does a good job of reinforcing that idea of like, even the villains think that what they're doing is the correct thing to do, except maybe Azula. She definitely knows what she's doing is bad.
Yeah.
Just the idea of trying to convince him on the day of his wedding, like literally just married him. And it's just like, mind if I steal him away moments after the ceremony? Hey, man, we gotta blow up every other nation.
I mean, she's probably used to it. I have a good feeling this is a beard marriage here. And she's like, I get it. It's the wedding night. Go on.
I agree. Sozin's whole thing is that, like, the Fire Nation is, like, in a period of unprecedented, like, social excellence and like peace. He specifically says peace, and then he's like, peace. Why don't we conquer the world? And it's like, maybe we could just like reach out to the other nations and be like, hey, this is what we're doing, like let's do some treaties, babes, instead of, you know, like ruling the world. So like I feel like that's the hit, because like he makes it sound all cushy and like he's doing it for good reasons, but like obviously there's other ways to go about doing what he like says he wants to do. So he definitely is evil, even if he's putting it in like a pillowcase.
Yeah. It's very much a classic. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And he's just like, everything's really, really good right now. We got to take over every other kingdom in order to have more peace.
Yep. Global war. Here we come. Let's do it.
Yeah. I guess that's I feel like that's kind of like an avatar who comes into the world at a period of peace. I feel like the only one we know of is Avatar Kurik or whatever, where but just like who knows what they're supposed to do, and so like they have to figure that out, and what he decided is that he wants to rule the world,
right? I mean, Roku clearly was in a time of peace, like we said, because he has time to have a freaking vacation home on an island on his off time, he says, as if he's not constantly on off time. Like,
he took his time mastering those elements. It's like, I know you have as much time as you want, but did it have to be 12 years? Like, why did it take you so long? Once again, it was a failure.
I think it would have been fun if we got like a sliver of seeing young Roku in the spirit world. I feel like that would have been just like, because I feel like Aang spent so much time there like learning stuff. I think that would have just been a fun part of like the training montage and explanation.
Yeah, and given more, like I said, like the adventure side of being the Avatar, like going and seeing the world, not just like being in these monasteries where you don't ever meet any real people.
Right. But it definitely like adds to like Roku's character as this idea. He like was in this time of unprecedented peace. Things were going well and he let his ex ruin it. And didn't really do much to fight it.
Yeah, and it's not like it happened under his nose and he didn't know. It's like he knew instantly and then chose not to do anything about it. And then, like, years later, like so long later, like the volcano thing happens and like Sozin takes the opportunity to kill him, basically. But and then like, but he just like believes that there's that everything's fixed for whatever reason. But that okay, and then like 12 years go by, and that's when Sozin strikes the air nomads. Oh, is that because the comet took a long time to come?
Yeah, like
he was waiting for the comet.
Okay, I was like,
also,
why
he looked so old at the volcano.
Yeah, well, the skin splotches.
Yeah,
the animators were very rude. Like, there was no need. There was no reason. There was no need.
I know, poor guy. He's already being painted in such a bad picture, and now they're literally painting him poorly. It's not acceptable. It's a great little Mufasa Scar moment there. Also, something to note there is that Roku, obviously, we knew he has a red dragon, and Sozin has a blue dragon, and so that plays into those visions that Zuko was having before, and now we kind of get like a, maybe he on some level did know this about his past, and so we're getting the blue versus red dragons again.
Plus, Iroh was the red dragon, and he is like as close to being the Avatar on this show other than Aang as anybody else.
Right.
When Fang wraps around Roku at the end, it's just so sad.
It is. And it parallels Aang and Appa, with Appa kind of sort of like around Aang and the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did also like that, like the Roku or Sozin's like memoirs end on him saying he wasted the rest of his life searching for the Avatar. It's like kind of a final sort of push to Zuko to realize that he doesn't have to be that guy, because that's what Zuko was doing. He was literally on a boat sailing around trying to find Aang. And so obviously that's what Iroh, presumably, he never confirms that he's the one who sent that, but that's what Iroh probably wanted Zuko to learn.
Plus, yeah. Like, he continues to do that. Like, he's still using his life trying to find Aang and make sure he's dead. It's like, come on, man. We learned all this in the Crystal Caves.
We did.
Oh, God. Iroh tries so hard. Like, truly a man of patience. Just never gives up on him.
He's given him this gift without seeing any results. He's like, you are a prince. And it's like, he is, but he hasn't done anything to earn this crown back. It's like, he has too much faith in the good boy.
He really does.
But, I mean, Zuko does take the crown. Like, that's a big thing. Like, even though I've seen this episode a billion times, I still was almost expecting him to, like, swat it out of Iroh's hands or just not take it. But he does take it in his hand, so who knows what that could mean.
But then, of course, he makes that face that you mentioned earlier where he's just so upset about it. He's just like, ugh, more internal conflict. Thanks, uncle.
I have to grow.
Now I have another physical manifestation of like my internal struggle.
Yet another, yeah, I know. Poor guy. You could fill a fucking room with those things. These trinkets that represent how tortured he is.
Yeah. He's got the mask, he's got the scar, he's got the swords, he's got this crown now. It's like, come on. Now he's got a room full of scrolls too.
I know. Yeah. And a full sister and dad who also play into it. Yeah.
Plus his moral compass locked behind bars. It's like the symbolism is too much for this man to take.
Does that conclude our spoiler-free rundown of the episode? Do we have any other concluding thoughts on this episode?
Okay, one note that I had written down was young avatars have no game, and I think we see that with Roku, and we see that with Aang when he's first starting out, where they have no idea how to be cool. They just cannot be chill.
They can't. Yeah.
My final thoughts were also about Roku's wife. Like, I know that she is cool, and like I believe that she is an icon in her own right, and I'm just mad that we don't find out literally anything about her. Like, I don't know her name right now.
Tamin? Something like that?
Maybe. I actually think that's right.
I'm a genius.
But it's like, there has to be something about her that, like, is the reason that Roku is able to fall in love with her and marry her. And it, I know it's about the Avatar and the Fire Lord, but I'm like, there's this third person in their trio that we don't know anything about. I wanted to.
Oh, and my other note is that I think I'm more Team Roku than the two of you are, based on you two think he's very dumb for dying.
We didn't say that, okay? We didn't use those words.
You see, so the episode I listened to, you describe Sozin as a dumb for just breathing in all the poison gas of the volcano. And I listened to that and I was like, I'm going to write this down because I'm a team Roku, and I think he did his dang best, and it was some pretty impressive bending.
Having watched this now, I do disavow calling him a dum-dum who breathed in too much of the poison gas. Obviously, the final blow was unexpected and unavoidable, and there's no way for him to have known about that coming up at him. But I do still think he was a failure in every other thing that he did leading up to the volcano, so it still holds.
Okay, I will 100% agree with that, because he should have killed Sozin. But I just want to say, you know, it was a lot of chaos up there. There were two volcanoes. I had a lot to handle. When Aang took care of the volcano, there's one volcano, whole community helping him. Just, you know, it's a different scenario. And I think Roku did the best he could.
He did. And it wasn't enough.
Roku hate pod till the day we die. But I agree that he may not be a complete dum-dum in that one instance.
Okay, that's what I was looking for.
Validation. Derek, final thoughts?
Roku's an idiot. We can't call him a dum-dum. No, it's, yeah. We do like to razz Roku on here, but, you know, at the end of the day, he's a cartoon, so who's the real loser?
Wow.
Us. Is it us? We're the losers. Okay. For the cartoon. You're like him. He's not even three-dimensional. He's the loser.
He's made up of a series of thousands of drawings. I'm a human being.
Right. God, I wish that were me. Just a bunch of lines with the colors in between them.
I already wear the same thing every day. Brandon, before we do spoilers, where can people find you? Do you have anything you want to plug?
Oh, my God. I always am so bad about knowing, like, having this stuff ready to go. So on Twitter, I'm at BDzirko. That's BDzirko. And on Instagram, I'm pretty sure that I am something else. I think I'm.
Why are you? It looks like you're like shuffling through papers. Where
I'm looking at my phone because I don't remember it offhand. I should really have known that this was coming, but I've failed myself once again.
For those listening, it just looks like he's like going through a file cabinet trying to find his Instagram handle.
I'm also at BDzirko on Instagram, and I remember because I was like, oh, I should probably make this one thing, and there
so
it
it's
is.
Easier to remember.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow my other podcast, At Word on the Straits, on Instagram and Twitter, which Brandon has been on. So if you're looking for a slide over to my other stuff, Brandon's right there too.
There you go. You can find me at Rain Dierks on Twitter. And you can find us at Bitterger's Pod on both Twitter and Instagram.
Sweet. Let's talk spoilers, because I feel like there's a lot to get into.
Right. Well, obviously, yeah, the whole like transcending lifetimes thing, like that does like come to pass specifically for Toph. I love that it's like Toph is the one who says it in here, and then she gets to berate Korra later on.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff there.
Yeah.
And also, speaking of Korra, though, the line that Roku uses is being the Avatar makes you pretty good with the ladies, and Korra also proves that to be true. It is good with the ladies.
True.
The Avatar.
Plus Kyoshi also.
I mean,
there's just so many parallels in this episode to the final confrontation, which, like, I feel like a lot of this season that I've never noticed before is like all just doing build up slash like foreshadowing about Aang versus
Ozai.
Yeah. I forgot his name. Oh, but like, even, I mean, obviously he like, they let him live and like, he's like, and obviously he comes to regret that, but like Aang also wants to be a pacifist and not kill Ozai at the end. Plus they keep doing these big earth spires and these fights that are like, symbolic of or referential to the final fight. And like in the Ozai versus Sozin, I mean, in the Roku versus Sozin fight, he like raises him up on this pillar and it's like, that's all that the final fight is. It's in these big field of pillars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
that. Just like that moment where Sozin is spared by Roku. And then to see that it could have played out a different way if he had just like looked for an answer.
Right. Yeah. If he had found a gigantic lion turtle, things would be very different.
Yeah. Oh, and also obviously we see that Roku does the like fully realized avatar state thing where he's just in the avatar state for like a second and then like does the bending, right. Which like we still don't know like what, well, no, they talked about that on the, with the guru, right? Like, do we know that that's like what the fully real, do we know that that's what he's like trying to do, mastering the avatar state? Like, I feel like I never had the full understanding until like at the end when he raises the waters and lets it back down, that that is like what it is that he's trying to do.
Wait, like, how do you mean? Like, use every element at once?
No, like, just go into the avatar state for a second to get the power and then have the power and then leave it again. I feel like we're like learning about that, but I feel like I don't have a memory of knowing about that. That's what it is until the very end, but that's neither here
nor. Right. No. Yeah. That's like the goal is hopefully to like have that burst of power and not let it control you like Aang has before. Yeah. But for Roku, it's all about just showing off for absolutely no one.
Mm-hmm. Just tearing up a beach.
Why the hell not?
Well, he did it during the volcano thing too, which is what I'm saying.
Right, of course. That one, but you know, what good did that do, really? Clearly.
It was a strong volcano is all I'm saying.
I know, and there were two of them. It was totally unfair.
Yeah, hardly a strong volcano, just two powerful volcanoes.
Just saying, like, you're taking care of one volcano, next thing you know, another one sprouts up. That's a bad day.
It is, but at that point, whatever. I don't need to keep harping on this man. He's clearly, life has already dealt its blow against him. He's just a ghost now, so.
I do like that this is an episode where it's basically just giving us a bunch of answers to a myth figure in the past. And, like, Korra obviously does this too with Avatar Wan. And, like, in both these instances, I feel like I would have liked to receive the history in like a more drawn out season long thing, but I like the episodes that they do it in regardless. Like, they do a good job of like just throwing up 20 to 40 minutes of answers, and like I enjoy it, but it was fun. That's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do a good job of wanting, like, making you wish you knew more about like the story there. And it did make me think, like, obviously Korra and the Kyoshi books especially, like, canonically state, like, yep, an Avatar usually has, like, a team around them. So it sucks that we didn't get to see Roku have that. But, like, part of me also wishes, like, that, like, Aang was almost, like, kind of, like, special in that sense. Like, maybe every other Avatar was a loner, and Aang, like, because of his circumstances, has to have this group around him to kind of fill in the gaps. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to make a show about that where the main character is by design supposed to be a loner. So I get why it became like a sort of thing. But that was just, I don't know, a personal sort of thing, like, idea. But now it's like, well, Roku can be the one loser Avatar who didn't have friends. And that's fine too.
Unfortunate.
Seeing Uncle Iroh in the prison just got me so excited for his eventual breaking out.
I know. I'm excited.
A great scene.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, yeah, like, we get to see Zuko put on that crown when he's about to leave, mm-hmm. To go see Aang and Co. Right? Does he put it on then? Or no, he leaves it there. He doesn't put it on until later. I don't remember.
I also don't remember. But I'm excited don't remember. To find out. I think, as we said, it is a hairpiece that is rife with symbolism, regardless of what he does with it. So anything if he put it on, if he made it into a brooch instead, like we could read into that for days. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So it's just an exciting build up to that big confrontation between Ozai and Zuko. And clearly Ozai very different from both Roku and Aang, and that he's willing to blast lightning at whoever, including his son, to get his way.
I think that he's just like Sozin, where he's just like, I don't care if you're in my way, I will kill you.
Exactly.
Plus, he's not even willing to take the L. Like, the Avatar's like trying to let him live and like leave without ending things forever, and he just has the endless drive to spread the Fire Nation joy throughout the world.
Couldn't he just be like Sozin and be like, okay, I guess I'll just lose and then I'll come back and kill you later. He's just like, no. I'm gonna be loud and proud about wanting to murder everybody.
I know.
He's the Phoenix Lord at that point.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true. Yeah, that you're too far gone if you've gone to that point.
Yeah, you can't go back.
You've commissioned the new like golden like clothing for everyone you're just too in the hole at that point to go back.
Yeah, no one's gonna follow you after that. Be like, hey guys, bad run on one of the Phoenix Lore. We're gonna try again later.
You're gonna have to call the printer and tell them to like that second batch of flags is gonna have to go.
It was a big swing, and you know it looked like it was gonna work. And I bet 9 times out of 10 that plan does work. But
yeah, I bet he was thinking that the whole time he was getting his bending taken away. He's just like 9 times out of 10 this would have worked. But now the Avatar's hands are on my head.
We're all shooting weird beams of light out of our eyes.
This is not my day.
It's just like this was an unpredictable series of events, and I shouldn't be faulted for this in the histories.
Exactly. He did everything he could with the information he had at the time. He should not be faulted for that. Good on him.
Yeah. In reality, I guess he's a sympathetic figure, you know, because he had a dream. He tried to achieve that dream and failed.
Exactly. Plus, I feel like he would have been able to stop the volcanoes. I'm sorry, bud.
Oh, my God. Right. Well, we can't all be like Bolin and literally who could probably solve that problem pretty quickly.
The thing that threw me off was during the volcano sequence when Sozin is like bending the heat out of the volcano. And
so
then, like,
cool.
It was really cool, but I was like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's Roku because it's got something air is happening. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, he was just pulling the pure heat out of it. And I thought that was so rad.
Plus, it seemed very redirect lightning-y to be like doing that.
Yeah, right. I thought it was always so cool when you see like the different masters of the elements have their one signature trick, and I thought this was just like a cool signature trick for him.
This could also be, I mean, it's like what Derek was saying at the beginning, where they were aware of the other cultures, and maybe they were maybe Iroh is one in a long line of people who do develop techniques that are based around other nations' things, because it does seem like it's an air nomad thing, but mm-hmm. Sozin is able to do it because he's studied the other cultures of the world.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine Fire Nation like generals going to like school to like learn how they do it so they can like make it their own and then defeat those people with it.
Yeah, it's not quite as altruistic as Iroh's, which
no.
Yeah.
Plus, I feel like that's ultimate. Like in the finale, like people always talk about Zhang's firebending. Not always talk about this, but I read once that people were talking about Zhang's firebending. His fire is like so much more physical than other fire benders that we've seen, and like that could be possibly like an earthbender sort of thing. So like I just like that there are these three masters who are doing fire bending through the other elements.
Mm-hmm. I can't walk 3 feet on the street without someone talking about Zhang's fire bending
and how much more physical it is than the other firebenders.
Hey guys, I'll talk about it on the podcast. Just everyone, please.
This two-episode character, just people love him.
Everyone's just, it's taking the world by storm, even to this day.
Yeah. Well, any other thoughts on the Avatar and the fire pause for space, Lord?
Not for me. I'm the dumb dumb here.
Yep.
I think Avatar Aang made the right call in the end to take away his bending, and that's where I stand.
I stand with Avatar Aang as well.
Good on him. Yeah, I mean, like, what else is he going to do? Decapitate the guy? That's a little much.
That would be a wild ending.
Right.
I mean, that's what all the other Avatars want him to do.
Exactly.
That's true. Kyoshi's just like, do it. Pull the trigger.
Well, pull the actual trigger. She hands him a gun, and he just doesn't do it.
Yeah.
Brandon, thank you so much for being here. If you remember, please let our fans know where they can find you.
Oh, it's B DeZerko, and that's on Twitter and Instagram.
Perfect. I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram and Twitter, at Word on the Straits, also on Instagram and Twitter.
You can find me at Rain Dierks on Twitter, and you find us at Bitter Jurist Pod on both Twitter and Instagram.
Perfect. This was awesome, Brandon. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh my God, thank you so much for having me. So fun.
Absolutely. No, you're fun.
Oh my God. I'm gonna redirect
that compliment right back at you like lightning.
Wow. Come at you like a boomerang.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks for joining us, and thanks everyone for listening.
Maybe Sokka is the one who's truly mastered all the elements. He does so much with the boomerang that people can do with the elements. Bye.
Bye, I guess.
Bye.